Part 7 of the History of Way Audio Creations and CPMG. Ben Friedman into 2011. All hit.
Don't let anyone tell you that jingles are dead. Don't let anyone tell you that jingles don't have a place on modern day radio. It's just not true. If Ben Friedman's studio is anything to go by, jingles are alive and well and coming soon to a radio near you. 25 minutes of music starting right now. Ben Friedman is the only person on the entire planet to be able to lay claim to have the longest running continuous jingle company. Yes, various names and guises, but always Ben Friedman.
Here's what's happening.
It's always been on the go, and I know that other Dallas jingle houses get jealous of Ben, because he gives the Dallas Singers more work than any other jingle company. Before we get into this part 7 of the history of Way Audio and CPMG, have a listen to some of the great classic contemporary jingles Ben has for re-singing. These for Kiss FM. Great jingles there for Kiss FM. Just some of the thousands of jingle tracks Ben Friedman has for re-singing.
Kiss FM.
But let's face it, the jingle tracks sound nothing unless they're sung using the best singers. And the best singers in the world, for jingles anyhow, are all in Dallas.
This is the sound of fun.
Okay, Ben Friedman back here in Dallas. Welcome to part 7 of the History of Way Audio Creations and CPMG. Glad to have you along. All right, one thing I wanted to comment on was what you just heard, the jingle for the from the Now Sound, right off the internet, cut number 1. This is the sound of fun, then the station there in Jacksonville or wherever it was, and then the version that we did for 14GVL here in the Dallas area, KGVL. And I wanted to point out how amazing it should be noted that we were able to take the Dallas A group that I record here and be able to basically emulate what was sung in Dallas back in 1986 by Pepper Tanner in their Dallas studios. And I think it was a great compliment to both Roger Holmes, who did the music writing, and the singers for the amazing results. And I just wanted you to note that. Okay, we're going to move on here to part 7. I turn this back over to David Hemsley.
Ben Friedman is unique in that he records the girls, the guys, and bass parts all at separate sessions. This makes for interesting mixing options that you just don't get anywhere else. So now we take a peek into the world of the Dallas A group of singers. They've all been in the business for many years, some as far back as Pam's, but they all have one thing in common. They all sing for money. Okay, then two things. They all sound amazing. So let's go backstage with Ben and the Dallas Singers.
So I'm actually recording right now, and I'm going to let... This is going to be part of the Part 7 of the History of Ben Friedman and Way Audio Creation, CPMG. And I'm here with the singers coming into the studio with the girl session that we're going to have with Abby Holmes and Kay Sharp. Just give me your basic reaction to Ben Friedman and our years of experience working with jingles. We've got Kay Sharp here. Go ahead, go, Kay.
Hey, Ben. I'm so excited and thrilled to be working with you all these years because it's just been, you are so into it, and it makes us into it, if that makes any sense. It gives us a lot of energy to just see your energy and your excitement about it, and it helps us to just get on board and on track. And,
yep. And when I've had
really
to do the famous kick the singers in the pants time, which we've had to do back over at Regal many times, where I've had to just say, well, let's have a little bit more excitement on that one. And you respond very well, even back to the TM Century days on the Beltwood Parkway studio there. Remember that place?
Oh, yeah.
Big old place. Yeah. So, Abby, now, if you can just glorify that a little bit, I sure appreciate it. Abby Holmes?
Well, I certainly agree with Kay that I have almost never worked for anyone with as much enthusiasm and love, a lifetime of love for jingles and the radio business, and it makes me... It reminds me of why I wanted to do this in the first place. It really lights a fire under me, and I enjoy your approach to the way you produce us, and I think you have a great product, and I always enjoy coming over to sing for you.
Now, going back to Kay, just familiarize me with where you started first in the jingles business. What studios?
Well, probably TM and Jam.
You did Gwyn Sound, didn't you?
I did not do Gwyn Sound, actually.
No?
Huh. I don't think I was even in town.
So you never did CRC?
I did not.
Or Future Sonic? Did you, Abby, ever do... you did Gwyn Sound. But
Gwyn Sound.
How about yes. Future Sonic or CRC?
No, that was before my time. But yeah. I was at PAMS. That's where I started.
Yeah, right. So tell me about some of your experiences in the very early days.
In the very early days...
You had Brian and you had Jim Clancy and Dan Alexander probably with you there.
Marvin Shaw and
Marvin Shaw.
Billy Ainsworth and Frank Blaybaum. It was really a thrill. Carol Piper.
Right.
And Linda Harmon. And that was the seven-voice group at PAMS when I first started singing with them. And then I sang in a group, a smaller group, with Trella Hart and Lucy Crane and Betty Zoller. And they called us the Boondock Sisters.
Wow.
And that was Skip Frazee who named us that, who was the engineer at, I guess it's Sound Techniques, I think was the name of the company.
Okay, you're still too young. Both of you are still too young to remember a lot of this, but what are some of your very early experiences?
Well, I came into the business in 76, late 76, and so I first started working for like Phil Kelly and Ken Sutherland. I thought that was at Dallas Sonic, wasn't it? I'm not sure. But anyway, so I started working for them in the very beginning and then started working for TM with Abby and who was it? Brian and Jackie, yeah, and Judy.
And when you first did it, you all stood as a group and then had headphones on and you were stacking up as a group, right? Didn't do anything newfangled like we do here.
No.
We record the girls and then the guys and the bass mm-hmm. guy, and I mix them all down,
no.
can separate them all and do all that good stuff.
Not that
I was a big group.
And Roger, now, tell me your experiences in the jingle business. You've been writing for a long time, right? You're mainly a sax player.
Mainly a sax player and arranger. These days, there's a lot more arranging going on than sax playing. And I think I started in the jingle business with Otis Connor adapting his vocals. And later with at Regal Studios for Merriman Patrick Turner. And then at Thompson, and working with you, I think, for a while. Well, there's nobody like Ben Friedman, that's for sure. I tell you what, nobody's got more passion for this gig than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can deny that, that's for sure.
You don't want to see the dirty things I do to my jingle CDs. I got a lot of passion for them.
Yeah, well, we're not going to go there. Kay just got that.
Dear.
So.
Yeah. Just kidding, jingle friends.
Okay, rolling on Akka Grid Part 1.
Akka Grid 1, Part 1, the first two pages.
Get ready.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Letter!
3, 4, 1, 2, 3.
Get country.
Okay, here we go. Ben Friedman here doing the History of Way Audio Creations in CPMG Part 7. I have in front of me in the control room here Bruce Wormuth and Steve Haas, two of my A-Team Dallas singers here, and we're going to start with Steve. Steve, you've been with me for a long time now. Done a lot of sessions together, especially that country package we did, the Nashville package, Warp 7. I remember we did that so many times over at Regal, everybody was memorizing it.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me a little bit about what your reaction is to Ben Friedman and what we've done together.
Ben's a great guy, and there's not a person in the jingle business anywhere that knows more about the background and the history and you know how to put together a package than Ben Friedman. He's Ben's a really, really knowledgeable jingle guy.
Well, tell me, Steve, how did you get started in all this?
Well, my brother was in the studio business out in Los Angeles, and I grew up in Montana. And first time I ever went to a session to watch him, I said, "That's what I want to do." I decided right then and there that's what I wanted to be. And
he was basically recording groups.
He's a singer, okay. And he was doing national commercials and lots of records and all kinds of stuff. And so after I graduated from high school and went to college for a year or so, and I moved out to Los Angeles and kind of got into the business a little bit out there, but it's really, really hard to get into the
sure.
business out there. So I got into a band. And
what's your instrument?
I don't really play. I play a little bit of piano, a little bit of guitar, but I'm not.
So voice is your main instrument?
Yep. But anyway, I moved here after I came to visit a girl that I'd met. We played a show out at Six Flags Amusement Park here in Dallas, and I came back to visit this girl that I'd met and brought a tape along and played it for some people, and they encouraged me to move here, and so I did. And that's when I got into the jingle business.
And all those sessions we did at Regal and all the sessions we've done together, what's your reaction to all of the jingles that we're able to produce here?
Well, they're all good. They're all, you know, high quality. Ben, you always hire the really good people. The singers have all been good. The players that played on the packages are, you know, all first call, top notch players. And so yeah, I mean, it's good quality stuff.
And Bruce Wormuth, we first met doing jingles over at Regal Studios, that's Tom Merriman's studio.
Right.
And tell me a little bit about your reaction to Ben Friedman in the jingle business.
Well, Ben, you're one thing that strikes me maybe most of all is your passion for what you do. Throughout the years, you've your enthusiasm and your commitment and passion for excellence in what you do in the radio jingle business, radio industry in general, but specifically radio jingles has always impressed me and struck me as something uniquely you. We were just talking earlier before we started the interview about how cool it is to sit down and mix these packages after you've got all the voices on, and how wonderful it sounds. And I think it that shows in the product you put forth. It's always top-notch stuff, and I enjoy it. I just enjoy being a part of it.
Well, let me ask you, I'm not going to name names, but both of you have worked for other jingle companies here in Dallas. How do you react to the way we do it here and the way other people do it at other studios, top-notch studios I'm sure you record at? Steve?
Well, you do things a little differently, just from a format standpoint, because you record the girls first and then do the guys next and then do the bass mic after that. So there's not another studio in town that does it that way. So that in itself is a little unusual, but I mean, it certainly works. It's not really right or wrong, but everybody's got their own their own style, I think, and you've kind of honed yours over many, many years and figured out what works best for you.
And you, Bruce?
Yeah, I think coming into the situation here, it's you've got sort of a cottage industry kind of set up, and you can control a lot of things, and you have your fingers on a lot of things, the mixing aspect and the producing of it, from start to finish, from getting those vocals down on the tracks to down to producing the shouts just the way you want to hear them. And also, I think, the layered effect is the way you put the voices down is unique too. That's something I hadn't run into before, and that's uniquely Ben. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit how you actually got into the jingles business.
Well, I had been going to college, and then I went to graduate school at the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York. And I know that's up kind of near some of your old stomping ground in the
Absolutely.
Buffalo area. And in fact, I used to play at the Tralfamador Cafe up in Buffalo. And I was a trumpet player and played piano. And I was at Eastman doing writing for jazz studies and contemporary media. Anyway, at some point after I graduated, I was on the road with Paul Anka and was back in town in Rochester for a little break. And something came across one of the guys' desks at the school. Somebody was looking for a producer and a singer for a production house in Memphis, and it ended up being the extension of the old Pepper Tanner company, which at the time I ran into it was Media General, and that's what got me into the business. I went down there and interviewed decided to take a job, and I was singing 6 hours a day in the studio there.
Which studio was that? Pepper studio? The one over off Knox Street there?
It was off of...
Fitzhugh?
No. This was in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, in Memphis. You did that Union Street.
Yeah, right? The old Diana Street vocal studio, which had a funky charm, let's put it that way. I think Steve's been there. So,
I worked there one time.
Yeah, so he knows what I'm talking about. I worked there for about 3 or 4 years, and then there was a blurb about looking for singers down in Dallas for the old TM studios, I came down. They were looking for a writer and somebody who might be able to do that and maybe produce some vocal stuff, and so I sent some tapes down, and they brought me down for an interview, and first I said no, but then I decided to come on down, and that was in June of 87, and that's what got me into the business. I was on staff for them for a while, and then I went freelance and started to work for other people in town. And
you worked with the legend himself, Marvin Shaw, no doubt.
In Memphis, he had actually left the singing business. He was working elsewhere in Memphis out of the music business, but I met him once or twice while he was there, yes. And he came through the studio, but I never worked next to him in a session on the stand. It's a great story, though. I got there, and they had these old big music stands for the vocalists that were painted gray, and there was on one side of the stand, down by where you hold the music, there was this stainless steel, kind of a worn mark. And I said, well, what's that from? And they said, well, that's from Marstam throwing his his headphone on the against the stand when something wasn't right with the take. And he'd worn it through just like a dog scratching at the door. And so I knew Marv. I knew then Marv was an intense guy at what he did. And it certainly translated onto the recording. So, yeah, that was fun to hear that story.
Well, this is Gary Eckert. I love singing tight harmonies in tune. That's always fun. I always wish Ben the best. Always entertaining. It's always different. You never know what you're going to get.
Now tell us about yourself, Gary. Tell us your history in the music business and some of the, I know you've done some great things with Bobby McFerrin, and just tell us a little bit about.
Bobby McFerrin is a musical hero of mine, and I've been so fortunate to tour with him and record on his latest album. I sing and play drums and keys and write and produce, and I feel very fortunate to be in this business.
Now, do you do some of the wacky things that he used to do, you know, singing all those crazy little chorus things? And
not as far as you know.
No.
I do all sorts of wacky things. I just don't broadcast them.
And Brian Beck over there, you and I have been working together for so long, but you are the epitome of the knowledge of this jingle business in Dallas. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you like working with me first?
I like working with you. You've always treated me fair. You've treated all the singers very well in this business, and I am the epitome of jingle singing in this business. So I know.
Go back now and tell us a little bit about the early days when you got started and all the companies.
I started singing in high school and was singing freshman in high-lows and was in the right place at the right time at the age of 19 to break into this business. And when they needed people who could sing at least half day every day, and that was us. We were all in college, and so it was a great time to be where I could learn from the monsters, from the Bob Seiberts and the Tom Merrimans of the world. And so I got a heck of an education as well as being able to sing all my life and get paid for it, which I love.
Now, what companies did you start to work with? I know Future Sonic was probably one of the first, and CRC, and PAMS also.
Future Sonic, CRC, PAMS, exactly right. Wind Sound, Ben Friedman Productions.
We've always had fun working together, haven't we, Brian?
We have.
Including at when Dave Scott had TM Century, had that great big building over there in Beltwood Parkway. That was a fun place for us to work.
That was a great place for me because I got to be the group leader, and I got to write the charts and make more money. And while I love to sing, I love to make money singing.
Well, you've done a great job of it, I'm telling you that.
He's the crazy guy.
Okay, Ben Friedman here. We have with us Joel T. Rutherford, our bass singer. Joel, just tell me a little bit about what's your reaction to working with Ben Friedman? That's the first question that I have for everybody.
Well, I like working with Ben. There's lots to do. There's always lots of singing to do and lots of cuts, and we get to sing for internet and radio and lots of places all around the world. It's great.
And tell me a little bit about your history.
I actually grew up in Canada and studied music at college level, moved to the United States in 1997, and have been singing with a group called Acoustics and traveled all over the world with them, and work at a private Christian school here in town, as well as doing some professional singing on the side.
Are you in the VM?
I sang with the VM for about 6 months.
VM is the Vocal Majority, which is the big, very large chorus group here in Dallas. And how did you like doing that?
VM was a great experience. They sing at a very high level, and I joined them for 6 months as they approached their contest in 2000 and won a gold medal with them at the International Barbershop Chorus Contest that year.
And you worked with a very famous guy that us in the jingle community, the jingle collectors are very aware of, Jim Clancy, who is he's the head of the director, is he?
Yes, he's he was the head director at the time, and now he's kind of co-directing with Jeff Oxley.
Jeff Oxley looks like Sylvester Stallone, doesn't he?
That's the guy.
He did some work here. Real good guy. Okay, well, we're going to go on with our session here, people, but I'm just going to cut out and thank you. Appreciate it very much, Joel.
All right. 14 GVM. 14 GVL. 14 GVL. Yep. 14 GBL.
A little late. Okay, here's track one again.
14 GBL. I need that again. I sang the wrong note at the beginning.
Here's one again.
14 GBL.
Here's track two.
14 GBL.
Another piece of armor in Ben's arsenal is the Sonovox, and the best Sonovox in the world comes from
Hottis!
From Ken Justice.
You're a funny guy.
Here Ben explains just what makes a Sonovox.
Okay, everybody, now David is going to play you the raw Sonovox that I record directly onto a CD off the board. And one thing you got to consider is that the background noise that you hear shuffling around is how we actually do this. Ken Justice has a audio tape that he plays on an old amp, not an old, it's a really good condition, Ampex tape recorder. And we have to use this because the output voltage matches what he needs to be able to drive his Sonovox speaker units, and it works out perfectly. So we have these tracks recorded, Sonovox driver tracks we call them, recorded, and they're all leveled up and set properly. So we've pre-recorded them, designed to work to drive his throat units, which are two little speaker units here. Actually, you would call them like driver units from a speaker. I think they're mid-range driver units from an old Celestion British speaker. And they're sized just about the size of a U.S. 50-cent piece. And there are two of them, and they fit up to the left and the right side underneath the chin into the, is it the larynx area of the throat? I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor, but I couldn't tell you. So you're actually hearing Kent Justice playing his Ampex tape recorder, rewinding it manually, voom, 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 and resetting the driver tracks to be able to drive it into his throat. He has a foot pedal device which can control where the audio comes in, and he can hear the actual, like a cue part of it in his, on the speaker device in the Ampex tape recorder, and he'll know where to punch in his foot pedal and be able to have it just right, so it just sends the audio right into his throat correctly. And you'll hear it if David gives you examples of this. You'll wonder, what is all this? How is all this noise coming in? But it all works out quite nicely. So anyway, what we're going to be talking about is the final processing that I do on the Sonovox, which now we're going to be converting over to Cubase digital computer system to record, and it'll be different. But I won't need to use my standard old analog tools, which was the DBX noise expander, my equalizer, the DBX noise expander, compressor, limiter, and the Alesis NanoVerb reverb, which is all going to be replaced by the Cubase. So I'm excited about that. But anyway, we have to do it and have to get the Sonovox just right so it goes into that big compression, that big clean front and big compression, and then expands out into sort of dynamic range infinity, if you want to call it that. 150 dB signal to noise is what we've been able to get on this as the Sonovox trails.
Stereo 92 KLIL.
Oh, I forgot what the track did. Okay, now.
Stereo 92 KLIL. Stereo 92 KLIL. Yeah.
There's just not enough room for it all.
There's enough room for KLIL.
Well, if we do only that and do the stereo 92 at the end, maybe.
Okay.
KLIL stereo 92.
Perfect.
Let me try another for placement.
Okay.
Stereo KLIL 92.
You want to keep going for that, or do you have one usable?
No, I think we got one usable.
All right, then. We did, or we're going to do, WP in our memories. How about that?
Yeah.
WP. He's the guy with your favorite song, spinning those discs and he can't go wrong. I don't know.
The history of Ben Friedman in the various guises is an interesting insight into the entire jingle business, and we invite you to listen to all the parts of this series. Thanks to Ben Friedman for sending so much great and exclusive material that made up this series. Who knows, maybe there'll be a part 8 with even more fascinating insights from the jingle past.
The History of Way Audio Creations and CPMG. Copyright 2011. Ben Friedman. All rights reserved.